This week on RSPNB Update, after a long wait, the closed iOS beta is here. We have our first impressions, then patch notes and discussion on the Ninja Team Q&A, as well as what the future holds for PAGS. And a big question from our listeners, where should the next archaeology dig site be? This is RSPNB Update, episode 777, recorded Thursday, May 14th, 2020. Playing RuneScape on iOS. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSPNB Update. Just Tannis and myself in this week. That's how rare these iOS closed beta items are, or iOS closed beta codes are. We wanted to get someone on, but out of the five people that I was paying attention to who were going to try and get one, only one of them successfully did. So we don't have anyone else aside from Tannis and myself on to discuss the iOS beta, but nonetheless, we both do have access to this, don't we?
We do, and I didn't know a single other person that got it. And, I mean, how funny is it? Like, we're all excited, and all of our friends are like, yeah, we had that 2 years ago.
Yeah, on Android.
Good for you guys.
And we'll get through all the finer details on that in just a moment. But if you're joining us for the first time, you can find full show notes at update.rspmb.com. I am Shane12088, and he is Tannis79. And, you know, you're right. These people have had this for a long time. They've had this since October of 2018 was the first closed Android beta launch at RuneFest of that year. Everybody who went to RuneFest that year, including myself, got a beta key, a physical key that you could enter into the Google Play Store to redeem for an Android beta. But, you know, I don't have any Android devices, so that wasn't for me. I gave mine away. And, you know, it's been a wait ever since to try and figure out when this was going to arrive. Because, you know, it's something I think many people have wanted for a long time. And it's I don't know if it's that people want it because it's something they're going to be using each and every day, like I have done this week. And we'll go through the review on that in just a wee bit. Or if it's because it's became one of those mythical things out there. Which one do you think it is?
No, look, it's great for, you know, Apple users to finally be able to get a beta. I didn't think we would ever even see this. I thought, no, I mean, I really did. I thought it would just come out with a full launch, and we were going to probably get iced out on the beta testing.
Yeah.
So I didn't necessarily expect that, but now that I've had a chance, I'm thrilled. I think people are just happy to be able to. It's crazy, man. I can't believe like so much of the game has been like being able to be played this way, and I haven't been a part of that. Like, it is crazy to me because I have enjoyed my testing this week. That's like, I have thoroughly enjoyed playing RuneScape on my iPhone.
Yeah, they gave away 3,000 codes or 3,000 spots. The first one was at 1,700 BST on Monday. That was the 11th, right? Monday was the 11th, I believe. Yeah, Monday was the 11th. You having this problem where you can't keep your days straight with everything being shut down?
A little bit. I mean, really all you gotta do is keep wine time and coffee time separate. Otherwise, you're good to go, man.
All right. And then the second wave came in on Thursday the 14th, the day we're recording this, another 2,000 of them at 10 a.m. BST. And, you know, so 3,000 in total. They have 10,000 to give away just because of the way Apple's test flight program works, which I'll just say this now, for anybody who wants to get one of these in the future, just download the Test Flight app from the Apple App Store first, because if you don't have that, you're not going to be able to get in. and these codes go in a matter of minutes. So just keep that in mind when you're watching for these waves. And they announce the waves 24 hours in advance on social media and on their website and the like. So just keep watch on that. So this is something that, you know, we're very interested to get our hands on. And I just want to actually deal with the first thing that came from last week's show. Remember the topic of Shane's burner phones. I did test it on an iPhone 5S from 2013. And you're not going to have a good time with that.
Didn't think it looked terrible.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It was on minimum settings, and changing maps was really slow because of the CPU in it. And if you tried to turn textures on, I think it's a RAM issue. It just will crash. So the first piece of advice I sent into Apple, or not Apple, Jagex on this, is that you really should blacklist the iPhone 5S series of phones from playing this, because they're not going to have a good time. And this is something that many people who have had the beta before might not realize, is that on iOS, and this is the reason iOS was done second in addition to the test flight things, iOS apps are expected to behave in certain ways. And these certain ways include not crashing and being able to offer a premium experience, because, you know, that's what Apple always sells. They always sell that Apple experience. And if you're selling an app that doesn't have textures on it, you really shouldn't be putting that app up. So that was my first bit of feedback, is that the 5S and 5C series phones of that year should not be able to run this. I hate to say that, but I think that's the way it is. You got to draw that line somewhere. The next bit, I took it out and, you know, did some archaeology with it, and, you know, it was just perfect. I recorded actually the entire Weekly Byte this week on mobile, which, you know, people seem to enjoy on YouTube. I've actually found that really interesting, to record the entire Byte on mobile this week, because, I mean, why not, right? So that was a fun experience in doing that. I'm going through some of these screenshots here right now. And, you know, I think I'm going to let you chime in on this, because this is the I want to save my parts for a bit of a live demo after that we're going to do on this. But the UI on the surface looks good, but there's a couple of niggles here and there. Performance-wise, it worked perfectly. Fluid, I have to say. Crashes, we'll get to that section later when I talk about the more extensive testing I did. But what were your first impressions?
Okay, so my first impressions. When I first got it, I was like, okay, let's see what's going on here. Let's see what I can use and what I can't use, accessibility wise with this app. So I tried to pull up RuneScape with my voiceover on. It crashed, didn't work, and then I turned that off, pulled it up. And it started, and then the crash shot off the bat. So
the sense I'm getting is that accessibility didn't work.
Well, not at first, and it's a little more complicated than that.
All right.
I wish it was it was just quite that simple, but no, not really. So I went in and just messed with some stuff. Turned apps up I didn't know were on in the background off, and all that kind of stuff. And pulled it up again, and
that actually
right
worked.
Up. Yeah, I pulled it up.
The same one as me, right?
Yeah, the 8 Plus. It's the biggest one.
Yeah,
the big one.
Yeah,
well, yeah. I did that, and I turned. I was on cellular at first. I turned it on the Wi-Fi because it's home. Just messing around with stuff. But anyway. I pulled it up. It went on. It was fine. But I didn't have my voiceover, so I couldn't when I would key into the username, it would pull up my keyboard, but I can't type on my keyboard if I don't have my voiceover, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what I'm touching. So what I would do is I held in the button, and you can actually tell Siri to turn it on and off. So since I already had the app up, I just told Siri to turn it on, and it was able to come on, and I was able to navigate with the keyboard. Yeah, but then I'd have to have her turn it off to key into the next, you know, area. So like for the password, I'd have to turn it off to touch that, and then turn it back on, and then turn it back off in order to be able to play the game. And then once I got into the game, it took me a while to kind of figure out how to move the camera. Like the first day, I don't even think I moved the camera because I didn't know how.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. That's a problem.
But I don't know if it was a problem because of that or just because I couldn't see. I don't know if it told me. It could have been in a box somewhere. I just wouldn't have been able to see that.
All right. So, and you know, that's to be fair, that is something we should ask other people then on that.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get a controls prompt either, and I will say that, though there is a controls prompt buried in the settings that tells you exactly how that works. Effectively, what it is that a tap on the game world moves you around. A tap on an item uses it. It's basically your standard left click. Press and hold is right click, and a drag with one finger moves the map around, and pinch to zoom as you normally do on a mobile device to zoom the camera in and out. But anyways, continue.
Okay, so that was kind of like my first getting into the game. I quickly wanted to try and see if the magnifier would work. That's in the phone, which is like a three finger double tap, and so I did that, and it zoomed in like exactly where
I tapped.
So yeah, so like wherever I would kick the magnifier in at, it would magnify that part of the screen, like it would be real big. Like I could tap over on my inventory, it would pop up, and that's pretty much I'd just see my inventory, and I could kind of see
It worked kind of how you would have anticipated it on the PC then.
Right, it's just you can't drag it around. Yeah. You know what I mean? You just gotta like tap it around.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. That instantly when I figured that out, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be fun. So I'm like, we're not limited to just skilling, because actually navigating some UIs was a little bit harder for me. So I tried to set things up so I didn't have to interact with stuff as much as I could at first. Well, I'm kind of learning, like, because it took me a while to figure out, like, oh, if I use like two fingers, I can zoom in the camera and zoom out. Like that took me a while to kind of figure that out, and that was because I was like up in the Slayer Tower, and I'm like,
right,
man, I know I can just zoom in, and I accidentally must have did just the right thing, and it did it. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute, and so I kept doing that. I'm like, okay, there it is, you know. But dude, I've got around way better than I thought I was going to be able to. Like I said, I can't actually, like, if I do a right click, you know, or press and hold, like, I can't really tell that. Like, if I knew what the order was, I could probably, I'd probably be okay, but I can't really tell any of that. So I can't actually read any of the interfaces like that. I'm pretty sure once I get on the iPad, dude, watch out, because as well as this working for me right now. Oh, and did I mention, like, even for like all of its inaccessible, this is still the most accessible mobile game because it's the first and only mobile game I've ever been able to play.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to underscore.
That's got to count for something, right? I mean,
And you know, this is something we've had since September of last year, and I'll just interject on this. You mentioned the UIs on the side. The default UI, the ribbon that loads up on mobile, you get seven buttons to choose from. It starts off with your inventory, your worn equipment, your stats, your spell book, your prayers, the powers menu, and then the drop log. And with all of that, you're actually able to customize them, and this is the order that they're in on the side by default. And this has been the UI on mobile since last September.
I kind of wish we had that in game, because I like how I can just, like, how, you know, how you just tap it and then boom, there's your backpack, like your inventory, and then you can just. I kind of like that, and then you can just press like for home for your teleports, and you can just It's kind of neat.
But we have that. We have that. You can do that in the ribboning game right now. You can customize the ribbon like that.
Right.
Did you know that?
But there's like, no, I know, but like the ribbon, there's like different choices and stuff. Like,
oh.
You know what I mean? Like it's not laid out to where, like one of the buttons on there, you can look at your equipment. One of the buttons, you can look at like your inventory, whereas those are in the same ribbon.
Yeah.
Thing. You know what okay. I mean? Like I just kind of, I don't know. I liked it, man.
Yeah.
I was.
Okay.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, let me dive in a bit with my first impressions on this. You know, absolutely fluid. The way it worked, it just opened up fine on the phone. It's an 8 Plus, which is a 2017 phone at this point, so it's not top of the line. It's not low end, and this is something we've been wanting to see for a while, is how does the game perform on a mid-range phone? Well, lo and behold, here we are.
I never had another crash, too. I'm sorry, Shane. I almost okay. forgot. I never.
Good.
It never crashed after that
Good.
Beginning.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. Now, the interesting part about this for me was that actually twofold. So first things first, I mentioned I recorded the entire weekly bite on here, and that went fine. And I don't have anything to really complain about performance-wise. I think performance is good. There is a reduced battery mode that you can enable if you're going to be playing for more protracted sessions, which I would recommend if you're going to be playing for more than an hour, because, you know, this will drain your battery, right?
Dude, it's like a Pac-Man. Like, I did forget about that. Like, yeah. I would have it sitting on my phone charger, right, last night, because I was watching a show, and I'm like, this is going to be so cool. I'm going to play RuneScape and watch a show. Watch
nope.
this. I put my phone on the charger. And, like, at the end of the night, I'm like, how did I lose battery power? Like,
when
it was, like, on 1%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, it's on 1%. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, and, you know, this is something that the Android client on mobile also suffers with, is that you're going to have these kinds of things where it's going to need to be optimized for battery, and that'll come with time. I think. And, you know, another thing on this, while we're talking about optimizations across iOS and Android, I took it out, actually. And if you are moving from Wi-Fi to cellular, disconnect. And the same thing happens on the Android client as well. So that needs to be fixed before they go full commercial on this. Because, you know, what's the standard use case? Door, putting your shoes on, you start cutting your tree, you're going to walk out, and then when you leave the range of your Wi-Fi and transition onto cellular, what, are you going to crash? No, that's not good. So that's something that happens on both iOS and Android, and that's probably something due to the engine, and I'm sure they'll get that fixed by the time it launches. So that's point number one. Point number two, and, you know, this is my problem to a degree, because, you know, 8 Plus, and I do have a case on my phone that holds two of my most commonly used cards, and there's some plastic on the case. So it's a heavy device and a heavy phone, and, you know, playing for more than an hour, I felt that my wrist was getting sore in ways that it normally didn't. So that's my issue that came from this, and I'm questioning if maybe the 8 Plus is too big and we need to go down a size. And, I mean, that's obviously not a question that's going to be for you, because you are using a magnifier. But I'm thinking for the vast majority of the population, and I don't have access to a smaller, you know, say an iPhone XS or a XR to test with to see how that would go. But I'd be interested to get the perspective on how it feels on sizing on those. So I felt that, you know, it's nice. The screen size is good, and so much so that maybe the phone's a bit too heavy, but that's a problem for me. So how did you feel about the screen size?
Well, I mean, like I said, you know, when it comes to reading the little dialogue boxes or UIs, I wasn't going to be able to do that. And I knew that going into it, figured that would be something I would do probably on a tablet. But I was actually really surprised at how well and how good I was able to play on it, being limited, being able not to really see a screen all that well to begin with, like, I really got around a lot better than I thought I would be able to.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, I was really, really surprised by that. Because I really anticipate, like, dude, I would have been fine. Like, if mobile was just a way to help me grind when I'm AFKing, I would have been okay with that. But it's so much more.
And this is something I did. I actually took it up to the Slayer Tower, killed some abyssal demons, and it worked just fine. You know, one of the things I think that we need, and I'm not sure how you would rope this in, there needs to be a way to activate Revolution without going into the combat settings through the home menu and then the settings option, and do it just from the combat UI at the bottom there, because I spent a couple of minutes trying to see, oh, are there any cogs here I can, you know, right click on like I can on the PC and whatnot. So it would just be nice if there was a way to access Revolution without needing to go deep into the combat settings inside the settings UI. And
well, you there's a little button on the bottom left when you touch that. Doesn't that bring up
your, that brings up the action bars where you can start pressing buttons, but it's not Revolution.
Right. Okay, you know what? I just set up a full Revolution bar.
Right, because when I
brought it in the back.
And this is this tells you about combat and how I work with it. You know the little gold rectangle around the action bar when Revolution is on? I'm guessing maybe that's something you don't see based on your magnifierness, but there's
I got the outline of that.
Okay,
I,
yeah. That gold outline when Revolution is on annoys the crap out of me if I'm not doing combat. So my Revolution is always off unless I'm actually doing combat, because it's just a eye distraction that I don't need.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So there's that. And, you know, I think at this point we can go into some of the usability things that I encountered. And I told you that I said, yeah, it's good, but – and I didn't explain what this was to you until now on the podcast. And I'm going to do this here. So one of the things that I notice, and, you know, I assume this is just the way the game is built. If you look at – say your inventory and the chat, it's very clear that, you know, if you have, say, a stack of items in your inventory, it'll say you have, say, these 21 key loops or these two half key heads. And then if you look over to your chat, it's a completely different font. Then if you look up to the bar on the top, where it shows your buff and debuff bar, which, of course, for most people in this day and age will show how many porters you have available if you have a Grace of the Elves. That is yet a different font. Then, if you go down to the very bottom with the orbs for the prayer and the summoning and then the life points, we got four different fonts here, Tanis, that they're all competing and rendered in different ways. And this is something that, in my view, should be fixed. And they should do from a whole of UI perspective, because yes, we can say that, you know, this is a work in progress because it all started off with, you know, porting RS3 over and just bringing over that one UI. But the fact we have four different fonts going on, they appear to be rendered differently. And you'll recall I mentioned that on the iOS side, when you ship an iOS app, the general sense of what people are expecting on iOS is a premium product. And that starts with a uniformity in most things, including fonts. So I understand we're in a situation here where we don't have scalable fonts. We don't have a user interface that's scalable. And you have fonts that, you know, don't even have a sub-pixel font rendering on them. And basically what that means is that they're not anti-aliased properly, and they just have a bit of a shadow behind them. That's what we have in the inventory. Then on the other hand, we have one style inside the chat box and then two different styles down in the combat and action bar. And these things aren't game-breaking. But if you want to have the premium of premium products, these fonts need to be brought into order. And like I said, it's not game-breaking, but this is one thing that certain iOS users like myself will notice. And it's a piece of feedback I sent in through the feedback option in the beta program. So that's point number one. Do you want me to move on to the next one, or should I just – or do you have anything to say on the fonts?
No, I would totally agree if I actually saw them. I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to get rid of the chat box because I just felt
mail envelope icon in the top left.
Oh, God, okay. Awesome. Yeah. Perfect.
And then you tap it again, it will – bring it out to a medium-sized one, tap it again for the third time, it will fully expand the chat box. And we'll go through some of these things after in the live demo on that. Now, the next thing is that...
get a tutorial video.
Right? We could do that. So if you're doing double XP in your training, you're going to get that orb that pops up on your screen. On your screen that shows you the progress and the skill icon, like that black orb with the little ring around it that shows you the progress to your next level. You got that. Then immediately to the left of that, you got the buff bar, the debuff bar, and then the double XP icon. And it feels as though, and you know, this is more of a personal feeling than anything user interface related, I feel as though that maybe the buff bar and the debuff bar are in the wrong spot, and the XP notification could be made to be a little bit more mobile friendly in terms of how it's presented, because you know, down below we have orbs and we have a bar down below, maybe something similar to that effect, or at the worst case, just bring it up to the very top of the screen like we have it on the desktop. And I'm speaking in words here that you probably can't see unless you're watching the YouTube version of it, but I think you know the little orb I'm talking about, right?
It took me a long time to find my buff bar.
Yeah.
Like where the buffs were, because I was using like aggression pots and charming pots and could not find that status. And I knew I was re-upping before I should have, you know, so
yeah,
that's one thing that I noticed, like with the sounds. So like the first time you would tap on your potion, you'd hear it. But like the second, if you tapped on another potion, it would go down, but you didn't hear it. I was like, ugh. Like that was where I really started focusing in and just learning or noticing more about like inconsistent sound cues.
Yeah.
Where I was like, ooh, yeah. That's like a real, but that's a game thing. That's not like a probably a mobile thing.
Yeah. And this goes into the next thing when it comes to the buff bar and debuff bar. The text for these, whether it be the aura or the grace of the elves, is positioned smack dab in the middle. And, you know, that's fine. Maybe that's the best way it can be done. But it just feels like you're preventing the icon from actually being seen of whatever it may be. And you're inviting the player at that point that you'd need to tap that icon in order to be able to determine what exactly is going on with that. Because I activate an aura, you can't see the middle piece of the aura, and that's how you tell what aura is active. And, you know, these are just little teething UI issues that will be resolved over time. They're for both iOS and Android because they render the same way on that. And that's one of the things that annoyed me greatly. Next up, how did you find the bank? And, you know, I just want to say that, yeah. You know, people have had this since 2018, but we're first getting our hands on it. We're getting our hands on it here for the first time, so that's why we're going through this.
I know, it feels weird.
Yeah. So the bank was hard, right?
The bank was a little hard, but what I ended up doing would be I would just do that, use that magnifier. So, like, I would tap in like kind of coordinates where like I kind of would start like in one corner, tap in and kind of be able to see which numbers those were, yeah. And then go out and then do it again in the other corner. And then that way I could kind of like mentally piece in the numbers, yeah. And then I just tapped them in that way. But yeah, not a mobile issue. That's a TANS issue. Probably. Yeah.
For me,
but I was able to do it, which was cool because most of the time that magnifier does not work in anything like that. So
that's good.
That was cool.
Once again, we have the different fonts in the bank that we do on the chat box and the buff bar. So that's a issue of uniformity. But the biggest problem I had with the bank was that at the top right, you have the transfer and presets tab to on the desktop. They're both shown at the same time if you have the room. And you have to tab back and forth between these. The transfer one controls how many items you'll withdraw whenever you tap on an item. The presets, of course, allow you to load one of your presets. You can tap on those. Then the buttons down below there are small, so you got to be really, really pinpoint accurate on that. Then this issue extends up to the close button as well at the top of the bank. And I found that buttons like these, the close button, the presets button, and, you know, anywhere else there's pretty much a small square button in the game, are really hard to press. They're really hard to press. And with that, I don't know whether it's something the way it's programmed in, because I felt like when I was pressing numerous times in the top right to close the bank, it just wasn't responding. I don't know if that's
See,
a
I thought,
me
I thought
issue,
that was
if it's
just
a bank
me.
Issue.
No, I thought that was just me. I had it happening with the area loot menu a lot.
It's that same kind of square button.
Yeah.
So I sent in some feedback on that too. And, you know, this is another thing that people at some point are going to say, is this really a problem? But, you know, there used to be, and I use the word used to be because nobody really follows these anymore. You are a great app developer if you do, but there used to be a set of guidelines that Apple would publish for their macOS and iOS applications that said that important buttons, such as a close button, should be a certain distance away from anything else that's actionable. And, you know, you have the bank, you have a bank info button immediately to the left of that, and then the presets and summoning buttons immediately below that. And if you were following these Apple human interface guidelines, it would be too close. And I think a question has to be made at Jagex. Are they going to follow the guidelines of the Apple Store and the Google Play Store, or are they going to do their own in-house thing on this? Because, you know, personally, if I was building this UI, this would be way too close to have. And, you know, you can kind of exactly see why they had to do this. This is one of the biggest phones that's out there, the 8 Plus. And there's not enough room to have up your inventory, the buttons to deposit your backpack worn equipment, the summoning familiar items and your coin pouch all at once. There's not enough room to have that,
yeah, no.
The tab, the transfer and presets tab as well. And this is something that I think they need to have a frank discussion about internally if they want to follow those human interface guidelines and add some more room between something that is so critical as a close button and everything else. Because you shouldn't have something that is a critical close button right next to something else that can load a preset or change the way that's located. So that this was these close buttons and the way this was positioned was probably my biggest concern that I had on there. And, you know, it also extends to the lobby as well, because if you go into the lobby, the lobby is the same lobby that we have on the desktop, and that's fair that if they hadn't had a chance to, you know, build a new lobby interface just for the mobile client, that's fine yet. We can give them that because it's still in beta. But
I recognized it.
Right. And you can still use the same layout. You just need to add more spacing between them, because tapping on the star to add a favorite world, impossible. I added the the wrong world twice before I got the one I wanted.
Okay.
And same thing extends to the friend list. I wanted to message someone from my friends list. I tapped on the wrong person and sent the wrong message to someone. And
Did you send them an article too, Shane?
No, I sent them. I sent them a message. I forget what exactly it was asking, but it was different. I sent Tanis an article about a mining operation in northern Canada that was supposed to go to someone else, and he found it interesting and enjoyed it.
Sure.
But yeah, see, and this is what I said. I mean, it works good. But there's just minor little things here and there that are a bit of a concern for me, and I want to go through actually a couple more of those right now, and I'll talk it through as I'm doing it. But what we're gonna do is we're gonna have a bit of a live demo for the people who are watching on YouTube, and I'll talk through exactly what we're seeing here, which is something I think that this was built for to do. So I'm gonna load it up and we'll go through it. So, you know, obviously, first things first, when you log in, you get your lobby, which is as you would expect it to be. That's the same lobby that we'd always seen. And once you're in, you're in. And you really only need to press that play button once and find a world once in order to actually make the hard decisions on what world you're going to play on. So I want you to just give me a task, something that you weren't able to do, and I want to just demonstrate a couple of these. So just tell me to do something in game in the game interface. So just pick something. Tell me to do something.
Anything with a make X. Go Smith something.
All right. So the first thing you have to do in that case is figure out where the nearest anvil is. And thankfully for me, we're in the Grand Exchange here in Verranc, so we can just go directly to the south there on that. And, you know, you're seeing some flickering, and that's probably just some artifacting somewhere that will get fixed along the way. Now, the interesting side effect of doing this on mobile is that you have to question, do you use the minimap or do you just click on the game world? Because I've found that doing this, it's actually easier to click on the game world than click on the minimap.
Yeah, I did the same thing. And you know what actually was really helpful was that outlining that they put in a couple weeks ago, because I'm like, ooh, I can actually, like, I could see where I touched and otherwise I wouldn't have. So that was kind of cool because there's no... And you know how, like, we're used to our mouse having all this mouse over text and stuff? And, yeah, there's none of that, but, yeah.
All right. I'm going to Smith a Bane Matic because I haven't done that yet. And so the Makex stuff is actually some of the best stuff that's been designed in-game. And when you click on something like a smithing anvil, you're getting what's called a modal dialog box, and that it takes up your entire screen. And this is exactly what I'm talking about here. In the smithing UI, in the top right, you have a close button, but you also have an info button for the Bane Matic. And, you know, or sorry, I guess that's just an info button for the smithing UI. So you click on that, and these two things are very, very... Oh, now I'm getting the tutorial for the Makex interface, Tanis. That's interesting. I didn't know that would happen when I clicked that. Fascinating. But this is what I was talking about, is that, yes, okay, I know to click there. And then we click in the middle and move on and so forth. But this is what I was talking about, is that this little X is too close to that tutorial button. And if you're just clicking around, you're going to accidentally click that tutorial button and get thrown into the tutorial just like I was. And that's not a good thing to happen by accident. So that's why right here in the smithing UI, as an example, is why you want to separate those. So the Makex stuff is, you know, great. It's exactly as you would expect it to be. Your character just goes and, you know, starts smithing as it normally does at the Artisan's Guild and whatnot, and I'll just let that continue to happen there. What should I do while this my guy is working on this?
Hey, why don't you look up something in the skill guide?
Okay. I'll do it for divination because that's going to be a boring one. And then you get another, modal skill UI. And you can see why they redesigned the skill UI a few months ago with this, or maybe it was even last month or something like that. It just works a lot better now on mobile when you click on all of these buttons. But if you click on the skills on the side, I think this is actually okay. I'm actually not having a problem hitting the buttons I want to hit, cycling through all these skills, which is good. And it pops it up and it opens it as you would expect. Character is still working on smithing that, so that's good.
Can you check a bit? Can you check your dailies? Because I imagine that's something we'll all be doing.
Yes, and now this is where this UI gets really interesting. Because how do you check your dailies on the desktop? Like your daily challenges, I assume, right? Or do you mean daily things that you can do? Like
no, the daily challenge. Like I use the little quest or the little compass icon on my ribbon.
Okay. So you want a daily challenge, like the daily archaeology challenge, for example. Yeah. So that's not anywhere to be seen on the default side ribbon that they give you. So what you need to do for that is you need to click the home button at the top left and then find the adventures menu, which is the quest icon, but not the compasses we have on desktop. And then lo and behold, you get your daily challenges. And then from there, you can open quests, mini games, beasts, the activity tracker. And see, this is actually something that you see that they reworked last year. The quest list actually renders really well in terms of spacing, which is what I said they need to do for the friends list and other things, is that render it in such a way that there's spacing between each one. So if I click on the Firemaker's Curse, lo and behold, the Firemaker's Curse actually pops up and I'm not clicking some quest that I don't want. So the quest list is actually really good, and that's because that was redone recently by Mod Stew.
I've totally forgot to do this. I need to try this. I haven't been in my port since I got mobile access.
Ooh.
Really should have done that.
Yeah, we can do that. I'll go show ports off in just a moment. But this is the next part that I actually had to detail on a YouTube comment. Somebody said, how do you get to your quest list? Well, I just detailed that. You press the home, then you go to adventures, then quests. But you could actually make that appear, and you can customize the ribbon. So to do that, you click on the little home icon in the top left, click the hamburger menu in the top right, which is the three horizontal lines. And then once again, I was having trouble there clicking in the top right, and you go to ribbon, and then you'll be able to customize your ribbon with anything that you want in there with up to 7 potential icons. Choices are...
How did you know to do that, Shane? Like, how did you know that you could edit it and go about it like that?
I Googled it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I didn't know if you got a prompt or something.
No,
like,
I didn't. And that's the concern, is that there was no prompt for this to get there.
Okay. I'm like, well, that's pretty smart thinking, but I don't know how I knew to do it.
Exactly. And the choices you have available are your inventory, your worn items, your stats, your spell book, your prayers, your powers, your friends list, your quest list, your summoning familiar info, your drop log, your emotes, and your notes section. Everything else needs to be accessed through one of the main menus that you normally have on your F keys in game, powers, hero, adventures, etc. And you access all these through the home button in the top left of your screen. Same thing with customization. You can pull that up. For some reason, that's not loading right now. That's a bit odd. And once again, I'm having problems clicking that thing in the very top right of the screen, that close button. So whoop, there goes the phone on the desk.
It was me. I was like, do I have too big of fingers for this?
Right?
Like, am I just
or is it just something wrong with the app? Then I just want to take a cruise to the settings UI because, you know, you have UI customization. This is the same settings UI you have on desktop, which this was my main problem when I was testing Slayer, is that on the desktop you can just right-click that cog on your action bar and then activate Revolution. But here you got to go into settings, gameplay, combat, combat mode, turn Revolution on. Then, in my view, it actually gets a little bit more confusing. If you go into the powers menu, you're presented with this screen. And you have a Revolution action bar, which I don't know how it pulled that together. I really don't know how it pulled that guide together. I honestly don't know how it... Oh, that's weird. I don't know what exactly is happening here, and that's not a good sign. So there's these two drop downs that effectively allow you to choose what icons appear inside the combat UI, which is a UI that is basically set up so that your fingers, and, you know, Android users have seen this before, so that your thumbs can be used to access combat abilities. And you press that by pressing the sword in the lower left. And I realize we're, you know, being really basic here for anyone who's been doing this on Android, but I want to be thorough with this. If you go back into the powers UI, you have your Revolution bar. And when you activate Revolution, this bar will be executed. Except I don't exactly know how this is changing, because there's a, you can change your left hand buttons to have action bar 1, and then you could have your right hand be action bar 3, but then that changes Revolution. I think I figured it out. And see, this in my opinion is not what you want, because both of these little drop downs point downwards, but the one on the right is actually, if you look really closely, connected to the Revolution bar. So the drop down on the right, if you're in the powers menu, controls your Revolution bar, but the drop down on the left controls the action bar that you have on the combat mode for your fingers. And boy, this sounds confusing on audio, doesn't it?
It sure does. I'm lost.
And I had no idea what was going on. And thankfully, when I went to go kill those abyssal demons, my two-handed option appeared, which was good. Or my two-handed Revolution option appeared. So I'm going to go to ports now and show that off, because you said that's what you wanted to do. But one other thing that was actually a little bit confusing is if you open up chat and you click on the icon that is the two heads with faces, because there's an icon that has two heads that are round, and then there's an icon with two heads and faces. If you click on the one with two heads and faces, that turns your ribbon into social mode, so you can then access your friends list, your friends chat, your clan chat, the emotes, and the grouping system. And I don't know if I just didn't get the onboarding for this, but I had to discover what these buttons did manually. And I'm betting you didn't even realize that this was a feature.
I've been trying out as much stuff as I felt like I could handle, but I also didn't want to get lost in menu screens and not be able to get out.
Yeah.
You know, so like I would only like open up one thing at a time and I'd close it. And I wouldn't like do something until. So I never even found those.
And you know, I'm gradually rounding it out to my conclusion here. And do you know what the conclusion for this is going to be? For mobile here on iOS and probably mobile as a whole at this point. It's that it's ready technically, but before it goes for a full launch, whenever that might be, they really got to work on some of these UI things because it's not going to behave how a mobile player coming in from either the Play Store or the iOS App Store is going to expect. And for people who are just downloading it for the first time, it's a little bit confusing. So they got to make sure they do the onboarding right, and they just got to make sure things are consistent. Those are the two things that I want people to take away from this.
And that, I will say that is something that I think probably saved me and did help me have a good experience because I am a experienced RuneScape player. So, like, I knew kind of like what I was looking at, even though, even if I couldn't see it particularly, I kind of knew what stuff was, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. And now for an example, for anybody watching on video, I accidentally pulled up a screen, the double XP live screen, and this checkbox up, or this tick box in the corner is so small, I can't close it. So.
Definitely.
And, I mean, this is...
That could be addressed.
Yeah, these are things that can be addressed and, you know, need to be addressed, I think, before we get to that point. But what I want everyone just to take away from this, and if you didn't get an iOS beta key, I'm sure you will get one in the future, is that it's good technically, but there's just a few things here and there that I think need to be addressed consistency-wise and usability-wise. And hopefully they'll be spending those next few months doing that.
And so is this the same, I mean, basically the same experience that Android has? Or is,
yeah, this is going to be the same like experience that Android has mobile-wise. It's the exact same UI. And my hunch is that they didn't roll this iOS beta out until most of the performance stuff had been ironed out because they want to use the iOS crowd to test the usability, because that's what people, of course, always expect when they're coming over on an iOS app. And sure, people on Android expect that too, but there's just a general understanding that iOS apps behave in a certain way when they are in use and whether it's a game or not. So hopefully they can use this iOS beta to iron some of that out. And I want to say that all the feedback I sent in has been tailored on this usability stuff. So hopefully it's being seen.
Well, what's the Theron said about RuneScape UIs?
It needs to be consistent.
And it was something like that.
Yeah. And then I don't even want to get into the debate of what happens when you have someone who is used to the mobile UI. Then they have a different UI on their desktop, because then you're having a whole other different discussion on that. Because, you know, the UIs look nothing alike, and there needs to be some uniformity between those two, I feel, as well. So, but yeah, anything else you want to mention about the iOS beta? I think I've gone through all of my major bullet points with this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say that there wasn't anything that going into it I thought I would be able to do that I couldn't. And there was actually more that I could I didn't expect to.
Yeah. So
overall, I mean, that's a huge plus. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if this is where we're starting, like, I mean, I'm very optimistic for where it ends up.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, you definitely want to ensure that whenever you're going to go full commercial on this, especially on the iOS side, it works and it feels like an iOS app in terms of, you know, having a genuine level of polish to it. And I think summing it up, number one, it comes down to making sure that the font rendering is consistent. There's consistent paradigms for all the user interfaces that are at play. The onboarding needs to be tested with some group of people. I didn't get any onboarding with this, and you know, many people are going to think that you just get thrown into it, but there was no onboarding for controls for me. I had to figure everything out on my own, so that's something that needs to be worked on with this as well.
Yeah.
And
me too, and I didn't even have a base to fall back on, so I'm like, right. I'm looking like I'm trying to do the force on my phone. Like,
yeah, and then, but, you know, when it comes to UIs, the biggest thing for me are the fact that those close buttons are so close to one another. And, you know, you can see it on pretty much anything that has a modal UI. So the MakeX interface is a good one on that. So hopefully that works in terms of just giving everybody a bit of a brief rundown on what to expect for this. In summary, in 30 seconds, font consistency between how the user interfaces are built and laid out, consistency between how the spacing between things is done, whether it be a close button or any other user interface element. I realize it's kind of hard on a phone. And finally, onboarding, making sure that people are able to learn how to use the user interface without needing to stumble around like I did. And that's my summary on it. So, anything else on mobile that you want to bring up? Talk
how
about?
Many times, how many times did you ask somebody or think to yourself, guess what I'm doing right now this week? You're like, play Enderscape. Like, I was like folding laundry. I'm like, guess what I'm doing right now, honey? Playing Enderscape. You know, like, just so many times this week I would be doing something like, oh yeah, and I'm playing RuneScape. If it wasn't for mobile, I would not be getting my double XP time in on Junior.
Oh yeah, I got like you know, another couple hours more than I would have normally doing archaeology. So
like, you lay in bed before you go to sleep and I'm like doing Slayer. I'm
that's
like,
not oh, actually God, recommended that's because it ruins the quality of sleep you have, but we'll allow it this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah. So. All right. I think we can move on then. You good to move on?
Good to move on.
Okie dokie then. So, that wasn't supposed to pop up. There was a notification, and I swear I put the phone on Do Not Disturb prior to this, but it was nothing. I'm sure you guys won't mind seeing that. Just a quick little group chat notification. But there was actually one other thing this week that many people were a bit surprised by, and that is that the cosmetic rewards and emotes from the first Yak Track event back in November and into early January of this year were added to the Augment store. That means the Spooky Raven pet, the Abyssal Prowler, the Witch's Doll pet, the Zack pet, the Arcane Blood Mage outfit, the Oathbreaker outfit, and the Nevermore Stalker outfit. All of those have been added to the Augment store. And, you know, with that, the price really isn't that bad, believe it or not. And, you know, the thing I'm pleased about with this is that if you miss out on one of these Yak Tracks and you just want to purchase one of them, one of the pets is 5,000 oddments.
That's pretty cool. It's real reasonable.
The Zack pet, the big one at the end, 15,000. And the outfits range anywhere from 2,000 to 20,000 oddments if you wanted the Nevermore Stalker outfit. Oathbreaker's 10,000. And, you know, I think this is a good use of the oddment store. So I hope there's more of this in the future.
Yeah, I would like to be able to buy oddments, like, straight up.
Yeah. I would like to be able to get oddments dropped in some way in game, but that's, of course, a microtransaction discussion that we've had before. So, just a bit of a note for people. Let's move on to the patch notes then. Not too many this week, most of them mobile related. Starting off, added the ability to sheath and unsheath weapons on mobile with a long press on the combat mode toggle button, and that's the sword that you have in the lower left corner of your screen. Improve the clan invite flow for mobile. It's not something I was able to test. I wasn't able to invite anyone to Clan Quest on that. If you do want an invite to Clan Quest, just join our clan chat channel, Clan Quest, and you can start guesting there and start the process. Introduce yourselves to us, and if you like us, ask one of the keyed people for an invite. Updated mobile checkboxes on the skill guide to be visually and functionally consistent. Mobile users will now be able to see the previous display name of a friend who has changed their name. You do this to press and hold on their name in the friends list, and it will show a tooltip and option and open more options. Mobile players can now see the animal's traits, referring to the player-owned farm, by long pressing on them in the trade menu. Added a check to make the worn equipment stat button on the worn equipment UI affect only the top-level version and not the hero loadout. Users can now tap on the icon for a handicap to see its effect on the Decide Your UI handicap inside the Dominion Tower. Oof. I don't know how I feel about Dominion Tower these days, Tanis.
It's been a long time since I've been there.
Yeah, I still have lots of achievements to do there for that task set, and I don't want to go back.
No, and the problem is you don't remember how to do half of those. Quest boss, you know, you're like, what? I don't know. What's the trick?
You know, you actually have a good thing in that the majority of them came out before EOC, so they're not too bad.
There are some that are less fun, though.
Yes. Yes, like the modern nomads and whatnot.
And the dwarves.
Yeah.
Nowhere to hide.
Fixed an issue that was showing the invention materials pouch button on the backpack prior to unlocking it during the invention tutorial. Fixed a performance issue which caused significant FPS drops after adjusting a specific settings on the graphics interface, and fixed an issue that would cause the chat window settings list to remain open if a user selected My Examine settings. Now moving on to other non-mobile fixes, the bank all option on Tetra Compass Ancient Caskets will now prioritize adding items to the material storage above the player's bank. Because, you know, previously, if you would do that, your materials would go to your bank. And, I mean, who wants that to happen? You want them to go to the material bank, definitely. An ancient casket has been added to the Archaeology Guild office. And, you know, this is actually a really important thing. Because it stores items from Tetra Compass reward caskets that the player doesn't have room for. And there was also a bug where if you press the close button of one of those Tetra Compass reward screens, you wouldn't get back anything like your tomes and whatnot until you logged in and out. Now they'll actually go to that chest, which, you know, when you open up a Tetra Compass, and this is something Sirion ran into this week, you think you lose your tome when you click that close button, and that is the worst feeling ever. So this was very important to have fixed. Updated the tooltip for the Dragon Battle Axe special attack to more accurately reflect its effect.
I'll remember that next time I need to get out my old Battle Axe.
Yeah, I miss the Dragon Battle Axe. And, you know,
I wish any axe that is, like, good.
Right?
Where's a good axe? I just want a good, you know? I want to go barbarian on some shit.
Yeah, and this got me thinking, and, you know, one thing I would love to have for a cosmetic override would be a RuneScape 2 2004-2005 dragon item cosmetic override. And, you know, we already have the armor and whatnot, but I'm talking about the weapons. So an early RuneScape 2 dragon dagger, an early RuneScape 2, and you could make it so it was poisoned too, even if it's not poisoned, because, hey, that's what the cosmetics are about.
Right.
The mace, the longsword, and the battle axe. If you could get a cosmetics pack with those four items in it, I would buy that in a heartbeat. Because I miss that old dragon longsword, how that used to look. Remove the chisel from the room in Daemonheim, where the player must carve a weapon for one of the three statues. And you're thinking, why remove the chisel? Well, because your character just carves it. You don't need a chisel. When using a fire, the option to cook food was showing logs as the icon. This has been updated to be a piece of meat instead. The ability bar tutorial during the Berthorpe first-time user experience now better accounts for players who have unbound their secondary action bar. Okay. Are we thinking that action bars and secondary action bars are going to be a topic for discussion in the Berthorpe first-time user experience? That seems like something you'd save for a bit later.
It would have. I would have thought. I don't know.
Added the numerical percentage onto the corrupted debuff icon in the Sophanim Slayer dungeon. So there was a debuff icon previously, but now there's a percentage that shows the corruption level. At the request of Clue Hunters, a teleport to Turiel's location, previous location in Taverly, has been added to the spellbook. It uses the current Trollheim T teleport icon. And one thing that wasn't mentioned in the post here, it unlocks a level 19 magic, and it requires one fire, one law, and three air runes. One fire, one law, and three air runes. That's what I said. That's what I said the first time, right? Yeah. So the same as the Varrock teleport, except it teleports you onto the other side of the bridge across from the Taverly Bank. So it's actually a nice teleport to have. A pile of rubble that can be found during Inakra's Lament was allowing players to acquire large amounts of extra fine sand at a much faster rate. A delay has now been added to put this in line with existing methods of obtaining sandstone. You gotta wonder about the poor guy who found this and had to report it. This is, of course, for making the blessed flask.
I thought it was different sand, actually, when I read it the first time. I thought I was talking about the stuff for Slayer.
No, they're all the same sand. They're all the same sand. It's the same sand as the one that you used for the blessed flask. Move the old bank area on the ranch out of time to the new bank chest location, so the regen area is what they're talking about with this. And the energized meteorite shard can only be bought once until it's used. You can also refund the shard by talking to Ezreal with the shard in your inventory. So if you accidentally buy it and you decide you don't want to go for the matic of space and time, you can have it refunded for that 250k chrono price. Then some other little fixes before we wrap up the patch notes. Scrimshaws of Aggression will now work on Vile Blooms. Attempting to read the Yak Track task list after the Yak Track event is over will no longer disconnect the player.
Oh.
Yeah. And oops. Fixed an issue where the Archaeology skill guide information was populating other skill guides. And there we have it. There's the patch notes for the week. Not too hard-hitting, but I think a good week to launch the mobile.
That was a good beta week.
Yeah, it was a good week for that. Next, we're going to move on to the Ninja Q&A live stream from this week. I didn't really get this much from this one, did you?
No. The most surprising thing was like there had been four Ninja Strikes already. I was trying to count. I'm like, four of them already? Like that. Seemed like it was.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. And then, see, the old ninja team didn't exist. It brought it back.
Yeah.
We wondered about that.
Yeah, and that was a good question to have answered. On the stream this week, it was mods Breezy, Aerator, Kalaya, and mod Porky hosting. Mod Breezy got renamed to mod Freezy in the middle of it because he was constantly freezing and losing connection on this. And, you know, I think it was good to detail how this is going to start out with the ninja team and its layout. So you have Mod Kalaya as head of the ninja team. Mod Breezy is their QA person. than the Ninja folks that are actually the devs. You have mods Aerator, Abe, Shogun, and KOC. And Mod Timbo is an advisor, with Mod Dorn as an advisor for localization, and Mod Carey, a community manager, handling communications on this. And then it was asked, how does the Ninja teams work in terms of actually developing content? They said other teams work on something called Scrum, which is effectively a two-week cycle. Then they evaluate where they're at. And then the Ninja team is more like Kanban, which, simplifying it, I know it's a fun name, is that you effectively work from a top of a backlog and just work on individual things here and there that are chosen to be the most impactful. And that's what the Ninja team has always been about, with the goal of improving quality of life. And I think we've felt that, because there's just so many different little things here, there, and everywhere with that, that they work on. So I think that's the appropriate strategy to be taking for this one. And what we talked about last week is that the Ninja team is going to be providing the content, at least it sounded like it, from the short and medium term for this. And I think it was a good sense to introduce these guys this week, right?
I thought that they weren't the same as what they had been at one time, and I was glad to get that confirmed. And then it did seem like it had, you know, been some like reshuffled lately, when the strike started, the first Denver strike started happening. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, some of the more fascinating stuff to me was the POG stuff. But I mean, I like knowing that, I guess, Mycalia is the one that's going to be in charge of deciding what to prioritize. The only thing that, like, the only question, you know, I have about that is, like, well, what happens when it's one of those updates that it's not going to hit a lot of people, but it's going to make a huge impact on the few people that it does hit? Like, will it always be moved to the bottom? Like, will an update like that ever see the light of day?
Are we thinking the same thing here about accessibility?
Yeah.
Because I think that's who your document was passed on to. I think it was passed on to the Ninja team.
That's what I thought too.
And this team was started in the tail end of 2019. It was actually Kalaya herself who approached Mod Warden to bring back the Ninja team as it was before. And the goal with it was to do improvements to a specific project so that that project doesn't need to be revisited consistently. And the big example they gave was Shattered Worlds. And the team felt like it was night and day difference with Shattered Worlds, and we felt that way too, to a degree, except it's just like, it's still a question of if you go there. And I think that's just a perception issue on how Shattered Worlds works.
Yeah, it's a perception issue, but it's also, they even said, like, same thing that we'd said, this should have been part of its launch.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Polish, delay, do what needs to be done, but that would have made a difference in its reception. It definitely makes a difference in its gameplay, you know. And I thought that was curious that was confirmed, you know. But nope, it didn't have everything it should have had either.
Yeah, and, you know, then the question came up, what's the scope of the Ninja team, and can they do graphical stuff? And they said that initially the Stormbarn addition to the Ranch Out of Time was initially supposed to be just add a Stormbarn to it. But they got some graphical assets, and that actually turned out that with that they're actually able to add in the house that is now at Ranch Out of Time and do all the other fixes that were associated with it. They want to be able to do that kind of thing more, but there's not going to be any guarantee to that.
Well, see, I like that about these Ninja Strikes, though. If you've noticed, like, they have seemed to take them one step further. Like, it'll address the problem, but then it seems to go in even a little bit deeper than that, and they'll clean something up here, or fix something there.
Yeah, and you know, it comes down to those three words: quality of life.
Yes, and that's something I think we'll talk about here in a minute. We talk about the pegs, but that's what these ninjas are all about: is quality of life, quality of life, quality of life.
Yeah,
and that, you know, and I understand, like, that's usually for, I mean, that's the most you want to do, you know, get the most bang for your buck. So, you know, where that's going to leave certain things, I don't know. But I liked what they were, I mean, I like everything they've been doing. Like, this reminds me kind of, like, of the old ninjas, but better. Like, because they went that one step further.
Yeah, yeah. They also do a deep dive into social posts about this piece of content before they start working on it. So you know what that means.
Reddit.
Yeah.
Because, we're going to look at Reddit.
I mean, sure, they're going to look at the forums too, but the majority of that conversation is on Reddit. They then gather the ideas together and they approach it from the perspective of a player. And, you know, I think that's good. And they said it was unanimous decision among the team on this stream that they had that Strike 4 was their favorite one. So last week, and that was of course the one with the stone spirits in it.
So. Like, I agree with them. I do think that was probably one of the biggest and hardest hitting strikes. Totally get that. But what is up with the, like, what's the right word? Myopia here with the stone spirits. Like, everyone thinks it's, like, great or something. Like, no. But, there probably is a certain group of people that they've received feedback on that probably does think it's a wonderful fix.
Oh, and I think I know where we're going with that, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. And, you know, then this section of the stream was ended by talking about the Ninja Dojo, which is their spreadsheet that they have where you can submit ideas to rs.game/ninja, 4,907 submissions as of Tuesday when they did the stream. They've gone through about 3,000 of them. They go through them every Tuesday or Wednesday on the top, and then they're just going to continue working through that backlog on there. And, you know, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
And I think everybody should remember that for when they want to send one of these in, if you want to have it looked at right away, send it in on Tuesday or Wednesday at rs.game/ninja. Have you sent anything in?
Since we're in labs, no.
Yeah.
Was done then.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Fully agree on that. Let's look at this spreadsheet here. So it's a little survey. You fill it in, make sure you're not a bot. And then there's a challenge to the ninja team. You get an open field for it. You can fill it out. And then you can select a category of interface, environment, animation, character, items, audio, textual, balance changes, or other. And then it will go directly to the ninja team for them to look at. And then it was time to talk about the player advocacy groups, in which the RS guy joined them for this. And his opinion on this, after the introductions and whatnot, is that he feels that his PAG has done an incredible amount of good work on this. They've had 4 meetings so far, and the process in general is that the PAG has weekly meetings with mods Kalaya, Bolton, and Carrie. I'm not exactly sure who Bolton is. I know that Carrie is one of the community managers. I wonder if Bolton has a mustache, eh?
I get a Waller stash.
The PEG finds problems and then discusses them and then provides input to Jagex in the weekly meeting call. They then present the ideas that need a little bit more time and discussion. They have around 300 separate unique items and have presented 250 so far. Now, the PAGs are separate from the dojo. And this is the part where I found it got interesting, is each PAG member of the player advocacy group reaches out to the community around them in order to bring ideas in. And a couple of the PAG suggestions for Ninja Strike 4, or rather, a couple of the PAG suggestions made their way into Ninja Strike 4. Gee, I wonder which ones these were, eh?
And, you know, something that I thought with that, I'm like, okay, well, that's great.
I bet it was the Stone Spirits.
You think? And the reason why was, like, now I know
because when you get a group
guy,
of PVMers together, they see these the trash deal. Drops.
Because, see, this is where I was, that's where I was going.
Yeah.
Because most of the people on that peg are PVMers.
And we're not saying that these changes were bad.
No.
Per se.
No, I'm, what I'm
we're
talking
just pointing
about is
out how they got it. Bingo.
No, what I want to talk about is perspective. Like, and I'm conflicted here, right? Because when it comes to the ninja team, the PAG advising the ninja team, do I want them to be this caliber of player? Absolutely. I want experienced people because they are the people that are going to know what the quality of life fixes we need most. That being said, if you're going by streamer, like streamers, and then he's going to have people that he knows, right? Probably other content creators. Whether it's Twitch or YouTube, mostly Twitch though. Who watches Twitch? What do you watch on Twitch? You don't watch anyone skilling on Twitch. You don't. Unless they got cleavage.
Yeah, things are starting to make a lot more sense now, aren't they?
They are. So that all the feedback you're going to get, the quality of life fixes are going to come from that perspective, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad there's some experience there, but they're all coming from a very insular point of view,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. And the question is any of Carrie, Bolton, or Kalaya advising them on this and challenging the biases that exist?
Yeah, I don't know. And see, but
because you and I both know, we were discussing this pre-show. Yeah. It's possible to see two different realities.
It is. And I said this, you know, before when we talked about this, I want to see what the next one looks like. Now, more than ever, I really want to see what the next one looks like. Because if this was a combat peg, you nailed it.
This was supposed to be a peg to advise the ninja team, not just combat.
Exactly. And I know
it
that
it feels like it was a combat PVM one, right?
Because that's who they have, right?
Yeah.
And I know the various channels and different people that he did reach out to, and I know that they did separate them. But no matter who you are, you're going to have a bias to what you do. And when you go and they tell you, go out and ask your community what they think. Well, your community watches PVM. What do you think they think?
Yeah, precisely.
You know what I mean? Like,
and then you said, is there going to be more PAGs? And they said other subject for the PAGs are going to be very different in their scope. And they need to ask someone else if there's going to be more of them. So that tells me there's not going to be another Ninja Team PAG. That's what I get first and foremost out of this.
But I'm hoping that – I mean, I thought that was hopeful. I thought, okay, we might get something cool here. Because what I'm looking at is saying, okay, say they want a PAG on – the lore council wants some advice from – or some input from, you know, players.
I know the right place and the wrong place to take from that.
Exactly.
I know where they would take from if it was a lore PAG, and where they wouldn't. And I'm not sure that's the right decision, just based on the way some of these places operate.
But see, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Who is that representative that they're picking, and how is that representative going to draw in his audience?
Yeah.
Now, for questing and lore, it can't be the same as the Twitch audience because
nope.
They're not the same people.
No.
So that's what I'm really curious about. Like, we could get some, I mean, other than the stone spirits, it's all the stuff has been good, probably.
Yeah, and we don't exactly know what was Peg and what was Dojo on that.
Right.
And, you know, we're moving away from ninjas and towards Pegs and whatnot. But I wouldn't be sad if they didn't do more of these.
I think there are some areas that could benefit so greatly from this.
Yeah.
Because it would be a way that could shine a light that's just not gonna be shown. But the way this turned out, I'm not sure is the product that they were looking for. Maybe it is, I don't know.
Right. And see, this is the way I see it is that it's good to ask for these people's opinions, but they shouldn't have an overarching influence of what gets built. There should still be the process of a game designer and a game balancer ensuring what's happening with that is okay. And I hope there is for this case.
Oh, but that's like the judiciary, right, Shane? I mean, that's how I see, like, that's the judiciary, right? JAGX and the JMods. The PAG was kind of like, that's kind of like the Senate, right? Cooling chamber, gotta separate this rabble that's coming out of the dojo. And the Ninja Team even said, like, most of everything they had seen before. There wasn't anything that they hadn't seen. Yeah. Is this a way, I think, of prioritizing more than anything?
Yeah.
Kind of what was, you know, making it up, what was most important to
Yeah, and then there's the whole point, too, about the PAGs, if it's actually proper to bring players in at this level to advise on this when they aren't designers. Because there's a difference between, you know, getting ideas on a spreadsheet and actually outright soliciting this advice here.
But that's one of the good things, right, was they actually didn't just come up with pie-in-the-sky things. They came up with an issue and a fix.
We don't know what the issues were, though.
Right, but they did talk about, like, they came up with fixes and stuff along with that. At least that was the claim. That's what the RS guy
said.
Right,
and they highlight issues of where they were. And see, I think to really have this discussion on this properly, we need to see what exactly some of these were and how much of that document about what was talked about is going to be redacted at the end of the day. Because if we don't have that, we really can't pass judgment on this yet. And, you know, we're bouncing back and forth here between Peg and Ninja. But the sense I'm getting is that there's still lots of discussion to actually happen on these PAGs out there.
In the sense that, you know what my real sense is, Shane?
What?
As much as I think these could be a good thing going forward, I think they probably already know what these people think.
Yeah.
I don't think.
And
you know what I mean? I think they already know.
And if I was making the design decisions on this, and if I was a game designer inside JAGX, I would be saying, why the heck are you guys bringing these people in to say, when I am a game designer and a game balancer, and if you ask me what's wrong with these, I probably play a bit of RS2. We can go through these and find these all internally in-house anyways. That would be my perspective on it, if I was involved on that.
Yeah, look, there's a time when I think these councils would have been a great thing, especially.
Oh, you know which one they needed? They needed one at arm's length last year before Mod Warden came in and started toning things down on MTX.
Yep.
That's the one they needed the most.
That's where I was going.
And, you know, that's not even. And see, that's more of an extension of CM rather than player advocacy, because it's not dealing with actual content that you're adding. So that's different, because there are people out there who have that different eye onto the community in that sense. And, you know, we can have a deep discussion on these, and I want to have that discussion when we actually hear back about these pegs, and I actually know who I want to have on to have that discussion with. So we'll save that for then. But that's all I got from the Ninja Team Q&A this week. Anything else you took from that you wanted to mention?
No, those were the highlights. I mean,
all right. Fair enough. There was also another stream today called it was Mod Stew's early player experience. It turned out to a Stew and A about the RuneScape Classic tutorial. So if you want to see Mod Stew's perspective on the old RuneScape Classic tutorial and the first time user experience for that game, give this a watch. You can also, with this, see a bit of a rundown of what all the different tutorials looked like. And they're going to do more of these, kind of just little chats with Mod Stew. I think the chat at the time watching it really enjoyed it. And you said that one put you to sleep, right?
It was just wasn't my kind of thing.
Okay. I really enjoyed it.
Probably. Well, you really get into those, like, what I would consider, like, real technical, and I lose focus.
All right, fair enough. But they'll probably do more of those in the future. So if you want to watch this, we have a link to that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Before we move on to our questions this week, I'll just take a moment to thank our wonderful Patreon supporters this week. I'd like to thank 29 Let's Go, Brock H, Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S, Diana, Jade Gizmo, Jade W, James W, Jason S, Joe M, John P, Jelly, Kyle, Nora, Our Memories, Rastafa, Rippeth, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And in case you're wondering what this is all about, this is about Patreon and a way to support the podcast if you want monetarily at patreon.com/rsbnb. So for as little as $1 a month, you get a special mention in our show notes, early access to the show notes, and of course you help fund the cost for hosting and production of the podcast. For $3 a month, you'll get a special rank on Discord and access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out each and every week on the show and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to build the clip show at the end of the year. Now, what are we doing with this, you might ask? Well, we do our monthly bit bonus show. This month's one was a recap of everything archaeology that we learned. That was a fun one to do. We have Inside RSBNB Update, which you can think of as kind of a little dev blog for RSBNB Update, how we do things here at the podcast. Those are written mostly by me, but sometimes we have interviews with other people in those. Then we have the Roundtable. This was a fun one. We did it last Saturday on Double XP Weekend. Kind of a tradition, though, because of the way Double XP work these days. It didn't really feel as special this time, I felt, did it?
It didn't, and it doesn't, but at the same time, I've already found myself kind of adapting this week because I have been doing Double XP on Junior. I mean, my main account, I'm just doing archaeology. But I've already started thinking about, well, what do I want to do with him for next time? Oh, yeah, there will be another one of these in the fall. And I'm, like, planning on how to. So, yeah, give and take, right?
Yeah. But this one turned into a design session on what a skilling boss could look like for RS3, which was fun. And we have all the recordings of that on Patreon, which you can have a listen to. And it wasn't just us three talking, you, myself, and Sirion. It was actually our listeners, too, offering their input, which was really good.
That was, like, one of the really, really fun ones. That reminded me kind of like the Anachrony one and just the energy that was present on the round table.
And then we have Movie Night, which this month's was Rise of Skywalker. But currently, Patreon members are able to go and vote for the next one. I'm not sure what's currently winning. Let me have a look on
that.
I
hope we get to make fun of something and have fun. Like, now we need to.
Warcraft is currently winning.
Can we make fun of that?
I don't know.
I don't either.
Second place is.
Probably. Is that like Warcraft? Like, WoW? Warcraft?
Yeah, it's based on that. And the second one is Austin Powers, the second Austin Powers movie. That one's in second place.
Class.
So Patreon members do get to vote on all that. So patreon.com/RSBNB for that. And if you want to support, we are eternally grateful for that. So thank you, everybody. Everyone. All right. Questions. We got two questions this week. First one is from Whitey. If a new dig site was added, where would you want it to be? Personally, I'd like to see it in Zanaris. This could bring some life to the place as it sees little use nowadays. Well, I think we got to address the elephant in the room for this, is that we're likely going to see a dig site at some point on Anachronia. Just with some of the stuff that Lanakea says and some of the debris that's around there, so to speak, the Orthon dig site. And they kind of showed that off at RuneFest a bit. We'll see if that happens. So I think we're likely to see that at some point in the future. Do you have a place you'd like to see a dig site?
So other than like Anachronia, obviously, was my number one, but there's another place that I think would be really, really awesome, and maybe we would get the added bonus of a fresh coat of paint, but I think Karanja needs a site. I think that would be really, really cool.
Oh, you could work that in with a Karanja rework.
Yeah. And there's just so much. I mean, there's a lot of lore and fun stuff. You know, a lot of quests we did down there, and now you hardly ever go there now.
Yeah, it's a bit of an
awful. I used to go there all the time in the beginning, you know. I'd like to see it there. I think it'd be cool. You could work either with the Tazar or like the villages. Like there's a lot you could work with there.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder how a Tazar dig site would work, because that's already underground. But imagine the graphical stuff that would be available for that. That'd be neat.
Can always go deeper.
Yeah, that's true. For me, this one goes back to somewhere where you tortured yourself.
Oh, no.
Tardiad. I'd like to see an elven dig site on Tardiad.
That would be cool.
Because...
That would be cool.
Because what happened is, you remember at the end of the Second Age... when Gothics tried to send everyone home, the God Wars broke out, and Saren shattered herself. So it'd be an interesting thing to see what were the elves doing in the God Wars. Granted, you know, it's on Tardiad, and that I don't know if dig sites have to be limited to within Gilenor, because Tardiad is, of course, a different world. You got to go through the world gate to get there. But there's nothing saying you can't excavate the history of a different world, right?
Well, no, and actually it would be cool, because if you did that, then you could put one on that band. Well, we got a Bandos one.
Yeah, we got a Bandos one.
Yeah. But he had a world, too, you know.
Like, yeah. Yubasek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Tardiad would be my choice on there. And the reason I say that is because, you know, that's one of the areas that's not really used that much. And it's graphically amazing. And there's such an opportunity to add lore for Saren and the elves there. So that would be my choice. Because we already know a lot about Gothics, and we learn a lot about the other god factions in the various dig sites for this. So,
else would be cool, Shane.
What's that?
Ferniskay.
Ooh, that could kind of like almost be a an extension of Caridad. Be like the original Zarosian dig site, and you'd be going way, way back for that one, because I think Ferniskay predates the Third Age here, doesn't it? Someone on the lore side will have to correct me if I'm wrong on that. Oh, and speaking of lore, next week we're actually doing our first deep dive into the archaeology dig sites lore related for the Infernal Source next week.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. So there's some good options there. Personally, I think Tardiad. I think we're likely to see at some point a dig site on Anachronia, and yours was Karamja, right? Or Ferniskay. Thank you, Whitey, for that question. The next one's from Mr. Ling. With it still being a few months until archaeology can be boosted by items and MTX, do you think that the perfect plus potion will affect it, and what could the bonus be? I'm going to just say that in reality, we're likely not to see that because we'd have to see a Juju archaeology potion added, which they could very well add for that. And then you would have a perfect plus variant on it. But let's just think a bit outside the box. If you were to have a archaeology Juju potion and a perfect archaeology Juju potion, what would it be? Because you can't do something that is one of the consumables, right? You can't do Fixate, which allows you to bring out a specific type of artifact.
I was thinking maybe something along the lines of a better chance of getting materials out of your sifter? The sifter, maybe?
Oh, out of the soil sifter? Mm-hmm. That could work. And then for people who are using the auto sifter, that would work if they were training, or the auto screener, that would work if they were training archaeology out and about. How about the perfect one? For the perfect Juju archaeology potion. I think it would have to be a boost, kind of like the mining one does, to maybe the rate at which you reach your sprite focus.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad.
Because it would basically add on to what you get with the archaeology skill cape, which is an additional 1% sprite focus when you're excavating with one. But maybe with this Juju potion, instead of going up by 2 at a time, you could make it go up by 3 at a time. I don't know if that'd be too powerful.
I wouldn't think so.
And then, so make the I'm trying to think which one is more powerful. I think you make the standard one, the one that you suggested, a higher chance of getting materials when screening soil, because then you could just have a standard archaeology potion that you drink, you get a 5-minute dose of when you're going to go screen your soil if you wanted to do that. Then you could have a perfect one, which would maybe give you that extra sprite focus. But see, the thing is, I don't know if that'd be too powerful. Have it go up by 3 instead of 2. What do you think on that? You think that'd be too powerful for time sprite excavation?
No, it might. It seems like a small change. I don't think so, but it would be hard to know until you tried it.
Yeah. I feel like I should suggest something that's different on there. Maybe you make the perfect one, the one that you suggested, a higher chance to get materials from soil, and then make the standard one like a 10% chrono buff. How'd that be?
That wouldn't be bad.
Yeah. Let's go with that. A 10% chrono buff for the standard, and then the perfect would be a higher chance of getting soil when screening. Or, sorry, getting materials when screening. So I'm happy with going with those two. That's actually a really interesting question on there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I kind of wanted Juju archaeology and perfect Juju archaeology now with that. So thank you, Mr. Ling, and thank you, Whitey, for our dig site question on that. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave us a DM or @mention us on Twitter. We are @rsbnb, and we look forward to hearing your questions. All right. Tech news this week. We got some interesting pieces of tech news. So, you know, it's been a long time. Unreal Tournament initially brought out their video game engine for other game developers to use to create content with, and this week they unveiled Unreal Engine 5, which is, as they say, their next generation game engine aim to achieve photorealism on par with movie CG in real life. And oh boy, they have some of these videos here in on this post, and these scenes generated by this engine are absolutely stunning. Have you looked at any of this? Any of all these graphics that are going to be available with this game engine?
No, not not other than my phone.
Okay.
I mean, you know.
And I got this screenshot up here of this ancient temple, and the detailing on this is absolutely amazing. They are really photorealistic. And you think, oh, this has to be a picture of a cave in real life. And then you go to the next screen, and lo and behold, these are actually generated inside of a game world. And this is something that Epic is giving away for free. Because, believe it or not, Epic controls the Unreal game engine, because one of their biggest titles, Fortnite, uses it. So what they said with this, starting today, you can use the Unreal Engine to build your games for free as you always do. But now if you make any money on it, Tanis, royalties are waived on your first $1 million.
Huh. Okay.
Which is a great way to get people on board with that and get them using the engine through the Epic Store, which, you know, as if we needed another reason to hook into Epic, right?
Yeah, right.
So, but yeah, you know, it's hard to say and get people excited why this is something that they should take attention in. But when you have a tool set like this that's available for free, is going to be able to run on Mac, iOS, Android, Windows, and just look at what it's going to be capable of. It really shows where we're going in the next few years in terms of game engine. And, you know, we thought back in the day that games like Doom were groundbreaking in the 1990s. We thought that the Halos were groundbreaking in the 2000s. Well, whatever gets built in the 2020s with this Unreal Engine is going to be absolutely stunning here. And, you know, it's going to also, of course, run on all the new modern consoles like the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5. So this is something that we can all look forward to as our games progress over the next few years.
Can you imagine that in VR?
Yes, and, you know, I can imagine that being one of the possibilities where people are going to use this.
Yeah.
So, and that's what VR needs to be successful. It needs a photorealistic world to kind of break that wall, and good performance too. So, and the water, water is so hard to do in terms of rendering, and looking at what we got here, it's truly something. So I'd recommend everybody have a look at this in our show notes. You can get a link to the Unreal Engine website at update.rsvmb.com. Our next piece of tech news deals with Google Play Music shutting down later this year and the transition over to YouTube Music. And for anybody who uses Google Play Music, you'll know that this has been in the plans for a while to shut down that and move over to YouTube Music. And of course, biggest thing people are worried about this is we know how crappy the YouTube recommendation engine is. So we're going to have to see what exactly happens on the music side of it. But the story this week is that YouTube Music added a transfer option ahead of the Google Play Music shutdown later this year. And what this will do is it will let Google Play users transfer their libraries, taste preferences, and players over to the YouTube Music service by just clicking a button within the app itself. And, you know, the idea behind this is that they just want to make it an easy transition to move from one service to the other, from Google Play Music to YouTube on this. And a lot of people were worried that they'd need to start over from scratch and build up, you know, that same search history, that same music DNA as it was. And if you're a Google Play Music user on iOS or Android or any of the other platforms, you will now see a transfer button that you can click, and you'll be taken over to the YouTube Music homepage. And, you know, I think we all have a few concerns about this because we know how YouTube Music works. We know how YouTube works. And, you know, it doesn't really seem as though it's the first platform out there for YouTube. I don't listen to much music myself. Which music streaming platform do you use?
So I do listen to YouTube music, but it's because I use a lot of YouTube playlists. So I like listen to them. The problem is though, like if you're doing something, a commercial comes on, like and you can't get to your phone to just skip it. It's usually some kind of like crappy song that you didn't want to hear anyway, but it's actually like an ad, and that's no good. No bueno. I like that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's fine. You know. I mean.
Yeah. And you know what they say with this, YouTube Music and YouTube Premium have more than 20 million paid subscribers, but Google didn't say how many users converted to paid customers were accessing their music side of it. So effectively they're saying YouTube Music is popular, but that number is already combined with YouTube Premium.
It really kind of sucks without Premium too, though, because you have to leave your phone open if you don't have Premium.
Interesting.
So the only way to close it and still listen to your music is if Premium. So it obviously runs your battery.
Right. Just like RS Mobile runs your battery down.
Yeah. While it's on a charger, I was like, ah.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how this does. And, you know, this is part of Google's habitual process of killing off products and renaming them to who knows what under the sun. But I'd be interested to hear from Google Play Music people how they feel about this. So this is just a bit of a news item of the impending close down that's coming at the end of the year. Now, we also have some other Google news starting this August, later this summer. Chrome will start blocking resource-heavy ads. And what they mean by this are ads that are just going to slow down your web browsing experience. And to highlight this out, they say ads that are poorly programmed, ads that mine cryptocurrency, or ads that just make too many network requests. Chrome will block them because they drain your battery life, they saturate already strained networks, and cost money that people shouldn't need to be paying on their data side of this. There's three possible thresholds of ads that, in terms of determining how they can be blocked. If they have more than 4 megabytes of network data, 4 megabytes for an ad, which is absolutely silly when you think of it. That should be blocked, no questions asked. 15 seconds of CPU usage in any 30-second period, or 60 total seconds of CPU usage. And Google will be experimenting with this change over the next several months, and it will roll out in Chrome Stable near the end of August. And what this leads to is that Google, in Google Chrome, has their ad standards group that really already shuts down the most annoying web browsers out there. But this is taking it one step further just to really remove those ads that are causing problems for that. And, you know, I think many people don't realize what a problem it is because you use an ad blocker out there, right? But, you know, we saw this on the website front is that, you know, at around the middle of the decade or so, ad revenue completely just hit the toilet because everybody started using ad blockers because they didn't like what they were seeing for ads. And that hurts website owners and whatnot. So we always say that our ads are, you know, unintrusive Google ads on our website. So if you use an ad blocker, please whitelist RSB&B on that. And they actually have a picture here, a chart showing what the heavy ads are. Overall, heavy ads are just 0.3% of all ads on the internet. But in terms of network data and CPU usage, they account for 27 and 28% of all ad CPU and network usage, which on its own is astounding. And you see why Google wants to shut down on that. Because, you know, they want their browser to be fast. And with that, you got to make sacrifices somewhere. And, you know, I'm glad Google is doing this because it's just not, in my view, not feasible to have everybody move over to an ad blocker just for the hell of it to do that. Do you use an ad blocker?
Yes.
Yeah. And
totally.
And, you know, it's a question of what you block and how you block it. Personally, I block ads on websites that I'm just passing through. But if I know the website and I'm a frequent patron of it and I know the ads aren't intrusive, I'll let them through. And, you know, this is also goes into the privacy stuff that we've talked about in the past as well on this, is that lots of web browsers, Firefox and Brave, are starting to take a privacy slanted focus on this too. So it'll be interesting to see where everyone falls, and it's looking like Google is starting to fall on the ad side of this. So, all right. Anything else for tech news? Are any of these stories you'd like to talk about, or should we move on to Skill of the Month?
The Skill of the Month.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, for our thieving Skill of the Month, it was a lot more quiet than the archaeology one. So much so that of the four people, three of them got XP. We have Magic King with 2.7, Rippeth with 1.3, and Earth got 16,000 XP in this one. Currently, the attack contest is underway. That one just started. This is the return of Skill of the Month. So we'll be back next week to have a look at how attack is going on that front. But there is something we need to do, and this is the double XP weekend achievement ritual here at RSBNB Update. The wall of achievements that you guys have done. I thought at some point we'd hit a limit on how many people would keep getting these, but they're just always here. So let us begin, shall we?
Build that wall.
Starting off on May 13th, we have Adani with 120 Herblar. Dennis with 120 defense. Idiot on a Stick also got 120 defense. Lady Claw with 120 Herblore. Lexi 10 with 99 Firemaking. Lusha with 99 Thieving. Nafan with 99 Dungeoneering. R3PO with 99 Woodcutting. Spartacus with 99 Summoning. VI Nightshade with 99 Thieving and 99 Cooking. Now moving on to the 12th, we have 1 Rib with 120 Dungeoneering. Lanakea with 99 Agility. Lexi 10 with 99 crafting, R3PO with 99 fishing, Rippeth with 99 constitution, Rootshock with 99 divination and 99 thieving, Spartacus again with 99 ranged and 99 herblore on the 12th. Then on the 11th, we have Badger with 99 mining, Jaguar 007 with 120 herblore, Jammy Jenny with 99 divination, Lord Earth got 99 slayer on the 11th. Mythica UK with 99 smithing. Nordic Falcon got 99 thieving. R3PO with 99 agility. Rootshock again with 99 mining. Stinky Pete 22 with 99 construction. And Whiskey TSU with 99 thieving, also on the 11th. Then on the 10th, we have Badger with 99 agility. Giovanni with 120 invention. K-Matt May 22 with 120 herblore. Lanakea with 99 construction and 99 smithing. Earth again with 99 defense on the 10th, Melchior with 99 ranged, Nafan with 99 smithing and 99 ranged, R3PO got 99 divination, Up the Iron 05 with 99 constitution, Warrock got 120 herblore on the 10th, then on the 9th we have Acronia with 120 invention, and Nextamarius with 99 construction, Dennis with 120 summoning, Hemsky with 99 fletching, Jammy Jenny again with 99 thieving, Lanakea with 99 mining, Lexi 10 with 99 herblore, Lord Earth with 99 herblore and 99 summoning on May 9th, nicely done, Lusha with 99 prayer, Magic King with 99 runecrafting, Mesgram with 99 herblore, Mikey X with 99 Archaeology, Peachy XO with 99 Divination, Schnetz with 99 Firemaking, Shamrock Sage with 99 Summoning, Spartacus with 99 Magic, SW Martin with 99 Dungeoneering, Thaxi with 120 Summoning, The Lion with 120 Fletching, Vapor 13579 with 99 Summoning, and rounding off the ninth, VI Nightshade with 99 Herblore, and at this, or 99 Prayer, and at this point, I'll pass it off to you.
Brief, Shane. Nice job.
I was practicing my auctioneering there.
Yeah, right? And nice job to everybody. Let's pick it up on the ninth, and we have, or on the eighth, we have One Rib with 99 Invention, followed by Annex T. Morris with 99 Smithy. We have Chief Snake with 99 Ranged. We have an Idiot on a Steak with 120 Constitution. We have J1, J2, J3 with 120 Slayer. We have Jammy Jenny, or Jenny, Jammy...
Yeah, Jenny, Jammy yeah. Jenny, I think.
Jammy Jenny with 99 Invention. We have Nafan with 99 Summoning. Nafan again with 99 Magic. And we have Nordic Falcon with 99 Herblore. We have R3PO with 99 Slayer. R3PO with 99 Hunter. We have Snitch with 99 Crafting. Skeet with 120 Herblore. Suits with 99 Construction, Swarm, Swarm.
I think Swarm. SW Martin's fine.
Oh, SW Martin. SW Martin. I thought that was like that Swarma stuff. Or
right.
Something. Okay. Yeah. SW Martin got 99 Ring Crafting. Taffing by got 99 Fletching.
Woo.
We have Tenimbre with 99 Summoning. The Lion with 200 mil Smithing. Way to go there. We have Up the Irons 05 with 99 Slayer. VI Nightshade with 99 Crafting. VI Nightshade with 99 Agility. Exon Ray with 120 Herblore. And finally, on the 7th, we have Himsky with 99 Hunter. Way to go, everybody. That was a lot of achieving.
And we're going to get to do it all again next week.
Yes, we will.
All right. Pick of the week time, and I'm hijacking this one from you. This was sent to me by Sirion, and this one is something that is used to build some hype for the SpaceX crewed capsule launch that's happening at the end of the month. And this is a docking simulator with the International Space Station. It plays in your web browser, and you can have a simplified simulation of how you want to dock this module with the space station. And you need to move this module from about 200 meters out while it's rotating and you're moving above the Earth. And it's actually a really interesting thing to do. There's a set way that is best to approach this. You can control everything from the roll, the pitch, and the yaw to the vertical directions that your ship is moving with this. And, you know, it's actually really interesting to do because, you know, most people think that when you're in space, you press it once and you're going to stop moving. But because you're in a zero gravity environment, it doesn't work that way. You actually have to keep in mind that, oh, yeah, you're in space, so you're going to have it so that you're spaceship is going to be in such a way that if you put too much thrust on one side, it's just going to keep moving until you tell it to stop. So you can't, you know, just hammer on the accelerator and expect something good to happen. You actually got to control it in a way that's very, very gingerly. And that's actually one thing that's actually really kind of fun with this to do. So you can find it at iss-sim.spacex.com. And if you go into the options, there's an option where you can turn gravity off. But there's another option.
An option under...
You can make the Earth flat.
Shuttle? You're kidding. What? Oh, Elon's going to troll everybody.
There's an option to make the Earth flat if you wanted to.
I would never have guessed. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But yeah.
Which way does the station go then? Does it go around us, or would it just be going around in a circle?
It would just be going around in a circle above your head and coming back.
Around the dish. Yeah. Oh, that's there.
Yeah. But this is actually quite the thing, and you know, if you've never imagined 3D space before, it can be kind of difficult to wrap your head around. But 100% free to play, works in your web browser, nice way to waste a bit of time to figure out what exactly is happening with the capsule. And, you know, you can maybe see what happens if you try and make it move at a specific angle first, or maybe you want to first stabilize your axes and whatnot. But lots of different options that you can take on this. It's actually a really interesting little thing to do. So that's iss-sim.spacex.com. And that's the pick of the week. Fun little web app.
So is it harder to dock the Elon capsule or to dock on Elite Dangerous?
I think it'd probably be harder to dock on Elite Dangerous.
Kind of my suspicion too.
Yeah, because Elite Dangerous, I've been told, is really good in terms of being realistic on that. So
it is. It's very, very challenging.
All right. What have you been up to this week?
Dude, everything. So really for double XP, I've been using Junior, and I got the last... So I had to collect charms so I could get the last few summoning levels I needed to be able to do or to get into Brif. So I actually did some Slayer Tower, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Got all of my combat skills in the mid to upper 70s now for him.
Oh, wow.
Which is, you know, that's not bad. And then hit 75 summoning, and then I'm like, well, we're just going to do some Slayer, you know, while it's running. And then on the main, I'm actually trying to... I've got to finish some collections, because I looked and I have... See, I thought I was an associate, but I'm not. I'm an assistant.
Yeah, that's
so a, I don't... Yeah.
That's
so
the level 71, like, I believe, associate, right?
I think so. I mean, I got the level... I got everything but enough collections, so I have
to... Yeah, that's always difficult to do that one.
Yeah.
All right.
But I really need to do that, because I need that sifter, because once I have it, I'm, dude, ooh, archaeology and mobile is going to be, can't wait.
You know, I'm still not using the sifter, or the screener, rather.
Yeah, well, I really want to.
Yeah, and I see how that can have an impact for, you know, the accessibility side of things, too. So, I understand. All right. As for me this week, I have been focusing on archaeology all through Double XP weekend, but I've been doing it with an augmented Matic, so I've been gaining Invention XP with that too during that entire time. And right before we started the podcast, I got 120 Invention.
Very nice.
So... Aside from that, maybe I did a little bit of dungeoneering here and there, but I've really been kind of just ignoring Double XP Weekend.
Live.
Double XP Live, correct. Because I really don't have much else to do, I don't think. Like, I could go woodcutting, but I'd much rather do archaeology at that point.
Doesn't It does kind of feel a little bit free, though, doesn't it? Thinking, yeah. Knowing that there's going to be another one coming, and like you can kind of do what you want right now.
Yeah, and that's a good thing.
I hate to say it, but yeah, I mean, it kind of... We lost something, but we gained something, too.
Yeah.
With it.
Absolutely. It's weird. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, while we've been talking about this, I'm still running the docking simulator on this, so you can kind of exactly see how involved it is if you're watching the video version of it, so that's a fun little thing to do as well. But I think that's about it for this episode of RSBNB Update. You have anything else before we go?
But don't crash into the space station just because there's cosmonauts on it, Shane.
No. Of course not.
I know how you feel about cosmonauts.
Yes. See, that's the problem. I left my yaw at 4.3 degrees. That should have been fixed before trying to make final movements. But nonetheless, I'll just throw a big wrench in it and leave it at that. Anyways, yeah. So, if you guys want full show notes, you can find those at update.rsbnb.com. If you want to subscribe to the podcast on any number of podcast listeners out there, you can do that too. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, soon to be Google Podcasts entirely. We're also on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course YouTube. Pretty much any podcast listener under the sun at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. So with that being said, we'll be back next week. Have a good weekend, everyone. Take care.
See ya.